Tri-State at the plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined today by our super producer in between his daddy duties, Jason Ruggiero. Jason, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Glad to be here.
You know, pretty soon I'll get to call myself super producer with daddy duties as well.
I know. I think is that your official announcement?
That is to the podcasting world. Yeah.
To all
of our listener.
Well, Dan already probably knows, so it's the other listener.
Dan in Buffalo does already know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, very excited. Yeah, we know we're going to be having a bouncing baby boy. So
future catcher.
Keeping us on our toes. Yeah, we're going to wear out his knees as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I figure that's that's the best way to get him entry into life.
Right. That's start those knee exercises right out of the gate. Get every ounce out of those tendons early on.
Nothing gives you a head start in catching like having knee problems as a 6-year-old.
And I'm sure you were kidding earlier when you said you're going to tie his right arm behind his back and slap it with a ruler if he tried to use it.
Absolutely. No right-handers allowed in this household. I won't be making the same mistakes my parents made with me, Jason.
That's good to hear that the next generation is correcting from the last generation.
Left-handed Burdicks only from here on out.
That's right.
None of that right-handed nonsense. Well, now that I've probably terrified all the listeners of my horrible parenting skills, let's talk about some real baseball, Jason.
Some possibly terrifying news.
Yeah, boy, if you're Bob Walk, you are just fired up today, I'm sure. That's because Major League Baseball's Commissioner Rob Manfred has said that there is very strong potential for the designated hitter in the National League, which is making traditionalists right now vomit collectively.
Yes.
This is according to ESPN's article. The article that everybody reads about everything that happens. Rob Manfred has said that National League teams might be more receptive to the designated hitter than in the past, even though owners ended 2 days of meetings without any serious discussions about expanding use of the DH. I don't know that I've heard anything less revelatory about the DH in the last few years. That was pretty...
Yeah.
You know, like when I clicked on the article, I was expecting something much more biting. Like,
yeah.
You know... I don't know, you know, like Bob Nutting is all for the DH now in the National League or something like that. And there's nothing revelatory. I mean, it was.
Yeah, I believe John Mozeliak, who's the Cardinals GM or president or one of the two.
General manager.
Certified bigwig said that it is, quote, gaining steam.
Yeah.
Which, again, like you're saying, is not like. You know, reprint the lineup cards or anything.
Right. I mean, Joe Torre was quoted in the article as saying it hasn't even been talked about.
But I guess it is, like, you know, more than we've ever heard, right?
Right. Which means maybe one person was talking about it. I don't...
John Mozeliak, apparently.
Yeah, John... I mean, like, you read the title of the article on ESPN is, Rob Manfred says NL teams might embrace designated hitter role. So you...
Well, it was probably Theo Epstein, right? Because he's got too many hitters.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough places to play people.
He's like, you know what would be great for Jorge Soler? If I could put him in DH.
Does he really have to play in the field?
Yeah.
Like, what? Do I really have to play?
That?
Does Kyle Schwarber really have to play in the field?
Yeah, it's got to be Theo. He's got too many good DHs.
Oh, my. There was nothing quite as controversial as I was expecting to be in the article based on its title.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's my opinion about the DH. You ready?
Yeah, lay it on me. What do you think about the DH?
I don't care. Make a decision and let's move on.
For the sake of discussion, I will respectfully disagree with you. But that's kind of how I feel at this point. Like, I don't really care. Let's just stop talking about it.
I mean, like, I get, you know, the allure of the traditionalist aspect, okay? You know, the strategery, as George W. Bush would say, that goes into having a DH, right?
Right.
And how it changes your bullpen usage. And it lets you do the double switch, which is this great, awesome lineup move that no one understands or knows how to use outside of 15 managers. And I'm not even sure all 15 of them know how to use
it. Yeah, so, that's giving them a little too much credit.
So, I mean, I see the traditionalist aspect, you know, and I see the traditionalist viewpoint of, like, the pitcher should have to hit, and it's fun to watch the pitcher hit. Well, it's fun to watch, like, Madison Bumgarner hit.
Right.
But it's not fun to watch, like, Antonio Bastardo bat in the 13th inning with a winning run on second base because they can't afford to hit for him.
Yeah, right, like, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what, like, Tom Hamilton, the Indians broadcaster, I mean, he goes like, that well, like, every like, time they play Interleague in the NL Park. Like, he's making one crack after the other, like, you know, after, you know, Corey Kluber hits or whatever. He's like, boy, that was riveting.
So but, here's what I'll say from the traditional standpoint. So I'm a Pirates fan, grew up National League fan with baseball. You know, in my formative years, I'm used to watching pitchers hit. And so I can respect the traditionalist standpoint, which is baseball is played with a certain level of strategy, especially when you're talking about the pitcher position coming up to hit. And if you have a player like Madison Bumgarner, there's probably a little more flexibility as far as how you structure your lineup because you know that he's not a wasted spot. But I like the strategy that the pitcher spot in the lineup adds. I like managers that get creative, like, you know, Joe Maddon in Chicago, where you're figuring out that it makes sense to let the pitcher hit eighth because then you'll put a guy in the ninth spot that can get on base and help turn the lineup over and, you know,
right,
provide more opportunities for the leadoff hitter to drive in runs and things like that. So I suppose if I'm taking Bob Walk's stance, I would not go as far as saying the DH will ruin baseball in the National League, but I will say it will take a lot of the strategy and fun out of the game that National League fans and traditionalist baseball fans have grown up enjoying.
Right. Well, don't forget to mention the superiority complex it brings.
Oh, right. By the way, can I also mention that I'm talking about the DH, a player whose primary job is to hit for a pitcher, while I'm staring at an autograph of Kevin Polkovich. So if you think the DH, like, eliminates weak hitters in your lineup,
yeah.
Just Google Kevin Polkovich. One of my favorite players when I was a kid. I was so excited when my grandpa bestowed an autographed baseball to me that has his autograph on it. I love it. It's my favorite autograph.
Well, just look at the Tampa Bay Rays lineup. It's got plenty of weak hitters.
Right.
One of them's a DH.
Right. Oh, yeah. I
mean, the Indians, I mean, ever since Travis Hafner's been gone, they've had, like, horrid DHs. They consistently have one of the worst, like, DH wars in the league.
Right, yeah. It's like the defense against the dark arts position at Hogwarts just turning over every year.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I honestly couldn't care less. If you told me today that there would be a DH in the National League, I'd just, all right, let's move on with life.
Yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't really affect me watching baseball or change my point of view as far as how I enjoy the game.
Now here, I'm going to diverge here because we haven't produced maybe the most riveting discussion here, although I think we've hit the salient points. So I'm going to diverge onto another topic that's been floated in the next collective bargaining agreement that maybe people didn't read about because it wasn't plastered all over ESPN, was expanding the roster to 28 players.
Ooh.
With the idea being that the owners and the GMs are saying, you know, we need more players because that's partly why our guys get hurt, blah, blah, blah. Plus, they're saying, like, with the way the rotations are structured, we're essentially wasting three spots every day.
Right.
So what they're proposing in the most draft form is 28 players on the active roster, and each day you get to choose 25 who are active.
Oh, I like that.
I like that, too, because, like, Corey Kluber pitched last night. He ain't playing tomorrow.
Right, yeah.
So let's just get, you know, Jose Ramirez back or something.
Right.
Like, something useful. I mean, and maybe that could bring some of the strategy back into the game.
Right.
If in the later innings, the manager had extra players to use, like, could the pinch runner actually return?
Right, yeah.
Which is fun, though, right? Like, Dave Roberts pinch running and stealing second.
Yeah.
The most famous stolen base, or one of the most famous stolen bases of all time. I mean, that was fun. It's fun to get that guy out there who can actually do something exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I'm Billy Hamilton's agent, I am all for this because I'm thinking Billy Hamilton's going to be like a runner here in another year or two.
Yeah.
This is job security for Billy Hamilton.
Yeah, he would be very pro the 28-man roster.
I don't know. What do you think about that?
I'm on board with that. I like that. The reason, again, that it does make sense is because, you know, like you said, your starting pitchers, you know, that have pitched recently and are just throwing side sessions.
Yeah.
They're never going to be in games unless it's, you know, like a late inning emergency where you need a guy to come in and lay down a bunt or something.
Right.
And then at that point, why don't you just have another guy on the bench who can actually lay down a bunt?
Yeah, right. Like, why not get that extra infielder who can actually bunt?
Right. So yeah, I'm very much on board with that. So let's say at the end of our discussion, we are pro expanding 25-man rosters and indifferent towards the DH in the National League.
Sounds like it.
I think that's what we can come to a general consensus on that.
Yep.
That's why we're such great friends, because we think alike.
Okay.
All right.
I thought it was because you thought I was nice and...
Well, yeah, you know, you're a very friendly person, great disposition, a wonderful father, a great example. Yeah, there's a lot. I guess there's a lot of reasons. I guess it's probably not just our agreeing on the DH.
I mean, because that kind of puts us on tenuous footing, you know? Like,
right. Oh, yeah.
Changed my mind.
Right. Yeah. If you change your mind on the DH, suddenly our friendship crumbled.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah. That you're right. Yeah, our friendship is much deeper than that.
Whew. Okay. Mm. Let's move on.
Yeah, moving on. Let's talk about the Pirates a little bit. It's been a while.
Yeah.
So a lot's been going on with the Pirates the last few weeks since we've last recorded. I want to get off my chest the first thing it's really been bothering me for a while now. And
today?
Yeah. Pretty much today. So Antonio Bastardo, the Pirates offer this. Antonio Bastardo, 30-year-old left-handed pitcher, primarily a specialist, although in recent years he's had better luck on both sides of the plate. But so Antonio Bastardo, 30 years old, left-handed, you know, throws, I don't know, 50, 60 innings a year.
Yeah.
You know, good K rate, you know, for his career. He strikes out over 11 batters per nine. So, you know, he's good at striking guys out, but you know, he's throwing 60 innings a year. How valuable is really a 60-inning guy, no matter how good he is?
Oh, so, I don't know. Could he be worth $8 million for 2 years?
I mean, the Pirates thought he was worth $8 million, which to me was like, whoa, hey, let's not go crazy, guys. And I'm all for the Pirates spending. Like, I like when the Pirates spend money, because usually that means we're getting better players. Antonio, $8 million for a relief pitcher who's throwing 60 innings. Not that great. Not overly impressed with that. So
we got a situation here.
Yes, it sounds like Silas does not like Antonio Bastardo either.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I'm not sure if he's a fan and he's upset that you're disparaging him, or
that could be. He's pro Antonio Bastardo.
Yeah, it may be. Continue.
So the Pirates offer him a two-year, $8 million contract. Overly generous, in my estimate. I mean, a relief pitcher, we're spending $4 million a year, guys. Like, we don't spend that much on our starting shortstop. And,
touche.
And Antonio Bastardo turns down the $8 million offer.
Ballsy.
I'm a little befuddled by that, I'm going to be honest. And so he turns it down, apparently knowing that the market is greater than that of a two-year, $8 million contract for him.
Right.
And he landed a $12 million deal with the Mets. I don't. I mean, baseball. There's so much money in baseball right now. I can't even fathom. It's just ridiculous.
See, I'm not gonna say I was right, but my 3-year contract to Joe Smith looks better every year.
Oh my God. I just. So, and I guess if you look at Bastardo last year, he actually threw more innings versus righties than lefties last year. So 38 innings against righties last year. 45 strikeouts, only a 207 average. Held him to a 280 WOBA. Like really good year
Oh yeah.
against righties. Lefties, he only threw 18 innings, held him to a 139 average, 19 strikeouts. I mean, good numbers, but man, 60 innings, and you're paying this guy $4 million, and then he turns it down and gets $6 million a year. Oh, I just.
Yeah, but like everybody gets $5 million a year now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right with the way that baseball salaries have gone.
I
I guess.
mean,
Oh,
what, Mike Napoli got like 8, 9 million,
this.
7 million?
Yeah. The corpse of Mike Napoli.
I mean, come on.
Mike Napoli's disintegrated hips.
Like Rajay Davis? Huh, why do I keep referring to corpses on the Indians? I don't know. We'll get to that later, but
Yeah, that'll be a very fun topic to broach here in a little bit. So I guess the
the
long and short.
salaries are just out of this world, though.
Yeah, that's kind of the long and short of where I was going is, man, I thought $4 million a year for Bastardo was a reach, and the Mets were like, no.
I mean, that's the irony of the whole thing, right? It's
Yeah.
like the Pirates make this offer, and you're like, ooh, that seems like a lot of money. And
Right.
then somebody else is like, I'll take your four, raise you two. You're like, what?
Oh man, it makes me wish I was a pitcher so badly.
No Antonio Bastardo for you.
I guess not. So I guess piggybacking off that though, Antonio Bastardo no longer a Pittsburgh Pirate. So instead, the Pirates are kind of going back to the scrap heap like they like to do, and they have signed a once, I think, Rookie of the Year, Nathaniel Feliz was.
That sounds right.
I think he was Rookie of the Year with Texas. But they agreed to a 1-year, $3.9 million contract with Neftali Feliz, 27-year-old right-hander. Detroit didn't offer him a contract. He's had a rough last few years. Tommy John surgery has been mixed in somewhere. I think
Well, you
two.
know, Detroit's bullpen is so good, they just didn't need him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I mean. The thing about it, and these were moves that I would think most people would be critical of, like Neftali Feliz, you're going to sign him to shore up your bullpen. Number one, Pittsburgh already has a really strong bullpen, one of the best bullpens in baseball. But number two, they sign these guys and then they just squeeze every ounce of value out of them. And they're to the point now where when they sign a player, I have to throw my hands back and say, all right, guys.
Yeah.
We're trusting what you're doing.
Right. No, I mean, you just kind of got to let it play itself out. Just think of Vance Worley and Joe Blanton.
Right. Yeah. Just squeezing the value out of them.
Yep.
So
I mean, that Ray Searage witchcraft.
that's it.
Uncle Ray.
We're gonna figure out what's wrong and fix it.
Doesn't
So.
Slippery Rock Brewing Company have an Uncle Ray ale or something?
I would not be shocked by this.
I'm pretty sure I bought some last year. Uncle Ray's. I'm gonna look it up. There's something.
Yeah, are you talking about at North Country Brewing?
North Country Brewery, yeah.
Yeah, check it out.
They got something.
Yeah,
In honor of.
when you find it, let us know.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'll continue on talking about the Pirates bullpen because this could be my favorite sneaky signing of the offseason, Jason. It's moved me emotionally. It's touched me spiritually. It may have changed my being to the core. And that is the Pittsburgh Pirates signing Daniel Bard to a minor league contract. Yeah, That's
yeah?
The big news that everybody wanted this offseason. I love it. I love it. I think this signing could be so fantastic.
What do you love about it?
Based on our Neftali Feliz discussion and our now known knowledge of Pittsburgh Pirates' ability to correct mechanical, psychological, emotional issues, whatever it is that is the hang up for these guys when they come into Pittsburgh, they fix it. I think Daniel Bard could get back to absolute greatness like he had in Boston before he got yanked around as a starter reliever. I think Pittsburgh can get him back to consistent mechanics, consistent performance. He has lights out stuff. I'm sure his velocity is down now after, he didn't pitch at all last year. So I'm sure that they'll have some things to work with. But I think mid-season, when Daniel Bard's arm is loose and ready, I think it could be a great, great signing for Pittsburgh.
So basically, you're of the same opinion as the fans of the last, four teams that signed him.
Yes, that is it.
Remember when I told you before that when you said that in the lead-up where we were discussing before the podcast started, you told me you were excited about Daniel Bard, and I said that I had a wise-ass comment that yes. I was going to save.
What is your snarky comment? Let's hear it.
That was it.
That was it.
That was it. You said it a little differently before, so it fit a little better, but you get the general idea.
I mean, you look at Daniel Bard's first 3 years when he was just strictly a relief pitcher, only had to come in and worry about, three batters in the order, wasn't having to turn anything over or anything. 2010, when he had his best season, threw 74 innings, struck out 76 batters, had a whip of 1, an ERA plus of 227. I mean, just a phenomenal season. I think there's talent there. I think it Daniel Bard's situation kind of reminds me of Brandon Morrow's situation, where he was just jerked around up and down, never had a chance to really get a consistent rhythm, consistent mechanics. I think as a result of that, probably had some injuries with his, arm and shoulder.
Right.
And just could never settle in. He was fantastic when he was in the bullpen. If they would have just left him there, maybe he could have been a great reliever.
Well,
so,
I'm
excited about Bard.
Yeah, I mean, I can't dispute he has talent, and you signed him to a minor league deal, so this is like a win-win. And what you need to do is buy him some Uncle Ray's Bucko Blonde Ale.
Bucko Blonde. I like it. Yeah.
We need to get that as like a sponsor or something.
North Country Brewing?
Yeah.
Sponsor us?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. We'll have to reach out to him.
We'll look into it.
See if we can get our show's first sponsor. So Daniel Bard, Andy is very pro Daniel Bard. Other Pirates news. The Pirates avoided arbitration with basically everybody. They didn't have to worry about Pedro Alvarez because we've already discussed that. But they did avoid arbitration with Mark Melancon, agreeing to a $9.65 million contract. That if you're counting, that's more money than
Antonio Bastardo
is making this year. Francisco Cervelli, last year of his arbitration. I believe it's Melancon's last year as well. Jared Hughes, $2.175 million, and Tony Watson, $3.45 million, all avoided arbitration. So that's good. Nobody wants to have to go to an arbitration hearing. As an adult, now that I think about arbitration, it makes me sweaty thinking about how terrible of an experience that must be for just everybody all around.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. And I asked you this earlier, and then we got cut off and we never got back to it. When the Pirates don't come to agreement with an arbitration case, are they one of the file and trial teams? Like, as soon as you have to file numbers, they don't talk to you anymore. You're going to the hearing.
I don't know, because I can't remember the last player that they had to go to a hearing for.
Yeah.
Maybe Neil Walker in his first year?
Maybe. See, the Indians are not a file and trial team. They'll discuss all the way up, and they, in 98% of cases, like the Pirates, settle before it gets to the hearing, before it even gets to the exchange most of the time.
Right.
There's a for those who don't know out there listening, there's a group of teams that are called file and trial teams. When you get to the point where you just exchange numbers because you couldn't come to an agreement before the deadline, these teams never talk to you again about a one-year deal. They just show up the day of the hearing.
Right.
These teams, in my opinion, are just like flushing player, like a front office staff time down the toilet.
Yeah.
Because in most cases, okay, you got people, you're arguing over like $1 million or $500,000.
Yeah.
Yet you've devoted like hundreds of hours of front office time, player development time, and scouting time to assemble this case, which you are then going to go into a courtroom, essentially, and present to your player all of his flaws.
Oh, boy.
Like, how is this helpful, right?
Yeah, oh, it gives me the sweats just thinking about it.
Like, not only the time you wasted researching it, but now the permanent damage you've probably done to your relationship with the player.
Oh, the psychological damage is jarring, I'm sure.
Ugh, it cannot be good.
Yeah, so the last player the Pirates did go to arbitration with, by the way, was Neil Walker. And Walker filed at $9 million. The Pirates filed at $8
million. Yep. So this is exactly, right?
The Pirates won. What happened in that meeting that made an arbiter?
Nothing that made Neil Walker very happy.
where the guy was like, yeah, we agree with the Pirates on this one. What did you, right. How did you slander your second baseman?
The last one I remember the Indians go, I think they might have gone with Josh Tomlin, but the same, and that was kind of because he had shoulder, maybe Silas knows better, I might be wrong. I thought it was because he'd had shoulder surgery that year. But right. The same year they also went with Nick Hagedone, and it was over like a piddly amount.
Right.
And the whole point was that was the year Nick Hagedone had punched the wall.
Oh.
And they had demoted him and put him on the minor league disabled list, which meant that his time on the DL did not count as service time. And he filed a grievance and they fought it because they basically were trying to make a point, you know? Right. Like, they're like, we're done with you, Hagedone. Like, you're acting like a child. And so then when he filed this high number for arbitration, they're like, nope, we're not doing this. You know, so that, again, I mean, I'm saying like this was like the beginning of the deterioration of the relationship with Nick Hagedone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I read today, we're getting off on the arbitration, but I'm pretty sure I read today that, who was it? Oh, it was a big-time pitcher, Jake Arrieta. He filed 12 or 13 million, and the Cubs filed like 7.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's a big gap.
Yeah.
It's like, he's your ace. You're going to go in and like point out all his flaws.
Right,
This is a good strategy.
You're going to go crush this guy? Oh, boy. Yeah.
And then you're going to turn to him in game one of the World Series and be like, go get him, champ.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Anyways. The Blue Jays are a file and trial, and I think they're off with Josh Donaldson by $500,000. After he had an MVP season.
Like, what? Oh, man. Like, I'm physically ill thinking about just, I'm all about something being fair and just crushing someone over that amount of money.
Yeah.
Like,
and they went to arbitration last winter with Josh Donaldson after they traded for him.
Oh, like, yeah, that's the guy you want to pick the fight with.
It's like, welcome to Toronto. No, we're not paying you.
Oh my God. Anyways. So. Let's talk about something a little more positive.
Okay.
with the Pirates, which is Gregory Polanco has stated that he's open to extension talks with the Pirates.
Yeah, who's his agent?
I don't know. I have it.
It's not Boris or
no. Yeah. He's not a Boris client. But so this news was kind of surprising because earlier in the year there was talk of the Pirates reaching out to Gregory Polanco's camp and saying, hey, look, we'd like to get a deal worked out for you long term. And his side basically just kind of shutting it down, like, no, we're not interested.
And, right.
You know, Pirates fans were kind of a little taken aback by that. Everything had been rolling great. You would think that, you would get a deal done, buy out some of those years on the tail end, and you get more money up front. Everybody's happy. Polanco is a BHSC client, it looks like. The same company that represents D. Gordon.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So not completely opposed to extensions.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's open to extensions, which is good. I think at this point, you're looking at Pittsburgh's competitive window, and you have 2-3 more good years with Andrew McCutchen.
Right.
You know, his contract's up in 2020, 2019, so something like that. And so, you know, you're looking at, you have a few good years left, basically, where Andrew McCutchen, you know, he's probably even past his peak at this point, but you still have 2 or 3 good years left with Andrew McCutchen before he starts that, you know, end of the career decline.
Right.
And so I think Pittsburgh has to be kind of proactive in thinking about, okay, well, you know, the McCutchen era is either going to end with him going to another team and making bank, or it's going to end with him not performing as an MVP caliber candidate, and we probably have to slide him over to a corner. And if you're locking up Polanco and signing him through some of those years at the end of his deal where you're buying out a few free agent years, and then you get him, you know, again before he can hit free agency, so you can buy out all of his peak years. He's very capable of playing center field. You could slot McCutchen, you know, to a corner. Keep Marte in a corner. You know, you have Austin Meadows down on the farm who everybody's really high on and would like to pan out. So, you know, maybe someone gets traded.
Right.
I mean, I think you just have to be, you know, really thinking 2 or 3 steps ahead of where Pittsburgh is at right now. If you're a Pirates fan or working in the Pirates front office. And I think that's kind of what these talks with Gregory Polanco shows, is that they're committed to winning now, but they're also kind of thinking about the future and where this club is going.
Right. And I think, you know, now's the time with Polanco, because you can't, if he has a really good season, like if this is his breakout year,
right,
you just cost yourself like $15 million.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's only going to be getting more expensive the better
right.
performs. So I think it's a good move. I think, and it, you know, kind of like with Polanco and in a similar case with McCutchen, if you're thinking about keeping McCutchen as a Pirate for the rest of his career, you need to be thinking about that now, even though he has, you know, 3 or 4 more left on his deal. Like, you need to be talking about, all right, what are we going to do? Which years are we going to buy out? How long are we going to extend this, you know, to?
Right.
Because if you let him hit free agency, he's going to price himself out of the Pittsburgh's market.
Yeah. There was an article, a blurb on MLB Trade Rumors from, I can't remember if it was Bob Nutting or the Pirates president. Because Nutting's the owner.
Yeah, Nutting is the owner.
I can't remember which one it was, but they basically commented like, you know, I'd love to see Andrew be a Pirate for life. We'll explore that, blah, blah, blah.
That was Bob Nutting.
Yeah, but the way the market is structured, teams like Pittsburgh and Cleveland, et cetera, it's difficult for us to do that or something, you know.
Right.
It was in reference to the new CBA.
Right, yeah.
And basically he was saying, I hope the new CBA helps me keep Andrew, is really what his comment was coming down to.
Right.
So, but to your point, I mean, you know, it's the same with the Indians. Like, the teams in this tier, it's not so much the window of contention argument, which is what we used to hear. It's more about how do we extend the window, and like where do we make those investments to keep the window open as long as possible. Like you're saying, you know, like we have to plan out 5, 6, 7 years in the future so that we don't end up like where the Tigers are going to be.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's it. That's it for the Pirates, Jason. What is going on with the Cleveland Indians this offseason?
Well, we were talking before the podcast. We think the last time we podcasted, the Indians had already signed Rajay Davis. So even if they hadn't, the Rajay Davis signing, I think is, you know, I think it's a good one. He'll be a nice fill-in for Michael Brantley. He will be a good fourth outfielder. He hits right-handed. He can play all the outfield spots. So if Brantley comes back and Abraham Almonte is not what he was at the end of last season, but more what everyone thought he was, you know, you could move Davis back to center or have him split time with Naquin or on down the line, right? So Rajay Davis, that's good. Plus, he get him away from the Tigers where he was like constantly a thorn in the Indian side. Always a plus. They also, I think it was like the next day, announced that they signed Mike Napoli. You know, so there's a right-handed bat for you. Not exactly in the prime of his career anymore, but certainly still has power. Certainly is a better defensive first baseman than Carlos Santana. That's kind of up in the air. I guess in the press conference, he said that he's been told he'll play mostly first and that he'll be, quote, playing a lot. So that's kind of led to a lot of speculation that Santana's just going to be DHing.
Yeah.
Which is probably the case. You know, maybe there'll be some kind of timeshare there to some extent, but I think you're going to see Napoli at first pretty much every day, which defensively is a big upgrade, despite, you know, him being older and not quite the player that he used to be. So that's kind of exciting, though, in a way. I mean, Santana wasn't a bad first baseman by the end of last year, but he's certainly not a good first baseman. But so now, you know, you replace Santana with Napoli, you replace the Mike Aviles, Jose Ramirez, mostly the bad Jose Ramirez last year combo with Francisco Lindor, and you replace Lonnie Chisenhall with Giovanni Urshela. So right there, your defense just got multitudes better.
Right, yeah.
Which, like, Corey Kluber is, like, able to sleep at night now. Because he's like, oh, I don't have to see Lonnie Chisenhall, like, booting ground balls out at third base anymore.
He's not haunted by the FIP monster anymore.
Yeah, right. So that's, I mean, honestly, you know, I know Indians fans want, like, the big signing, and they're upset about the Tigers signing Justin Upton and Jordan Zimmermann, and we'll kind of hit on that in a minute, but the improvement of that defense can't be understated. You know, I mean, that defense was bad.
Oh, and I mean, we talked about it last year. Once, yeah, Francisco Lindor came up, the Cleveland Indians went from, I believe, next to the last or last in defensive efficiency to, right, suddenly they were like a top 10 defensive team at the end of the season.
Right. Well, I mean, you also got Michael Bourne out of center field. You got some kind of ugly Nick Swisher, ha ha ha. David Murphy. What's the other guy's name? The big slugger there who they kept cutting and re-signing.
Mark Reynolds.
Him too, but he was an outfielder. Oh, man, it's going to kill me. Silas knows, but he's not telling me. Anyways, you get guys like that out of the outfield, and you replace them with Lonnie Chisenhall, who is actually good in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll see if that continues. I mean, it's certainly not something we can, like, bank on at this point. But if Lonnie Chisenhall can actually be a decent right fielder. Now you've got like all nine guys can play defense.
Right.
As opposed to like two guys. And hopefully Kipnis is, you know, more agile again like he was last year. But I think the defense is going to be a lot better. They're still supposedly kicking around the idea. Sorry about that. They're still kicking around the idea of signing Juan Uribe, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I think it would be a decent, you know, insurance with Urshela, since you have no idea really how well that's going to pan out. And Uribe's probably slightly below average hitter now, but a decent defender.
Right, a good defender.
So, I mean, it's like, if you had to play Juan Uribe every day, I don't think you'd be, like, killing yourself. It wouldn't be great, but...
Right.
So that's kind of the infield, which has solidified slightly with the addition of Napoli. And like I said, I mean, I'm not saying Napoli is a savior, and I'm going to be real curious to see where they let him bat. But... let's be realistic. That's probably the best signing the Indians could have made on the free agent market. They're not going to go out and sign.
Right. They're not in the market for Chris Davis. They're
right. So if you're talking about spending $8, $9 million, that was probably a pretty wise investment. In the outfield, you know, like I said, it's going to be a little ugly until Brantley gets back, especially because we don't know what we're going to get out of the Chisenhall Cowgill combination in right field.
Yeah.
And Abraham Almonte in center. So that's where people are still clamoring, you know, like, and I think there were probably some dreamers out there that had their dreams finally dashed today when it was revealed that Yoannis Cespedes was getting like 5-year contract offers.
Right.
So it's like, you know, he's not going to take like a 1-year pillow deal or like a 4-year deal with a 1-year opt out or something. Like, just forget about it. The only guy probably left on the outfield market that, or the only type of people that they might sign would, I guess, be like an Austin Jackson kind of character, which doesn't excite me very much.
Right.
The problem with the outfield signing is like they're just waiting for Bradley Zimmer. Like they're not going to sign, you know, Cespedes. I would be shocked if they signed Dexter Fowler, you know, like he's not going to take a 1-year deal. He's going to cost a draft pick. And is he really that much better?
And I mean, the Indians have guys down on the farm that are major league ready that they could, I don't know necessarily that are major league ready, but they should check it and at least be checking and seeing if they're major league ready before they go out and.
Well, right. And I think, you know, who they really want to wait for is Bradley Zimmer.
Right.
You know, but he's probably not going to be ready this year. So you need 1 year. And honestly, I think they look out and they say, we're going to give Almonte a shot, and if it's not working out, it's probably time to try Tyler Naquin.
Right.
You know?
That's who I was just about to bring up was, you know, give Naquin a shot.
Right.
I mean,
I think if Naquin has a good camp, he probably has a shot to make the team, you know?
Right, because there's no depth there until Brandt's
right.
back.
Right. So I think it's a little bit in Naquin's court here, which will be something kind of fun to watch. And I think he does have a real shot, and he's had some injury problems, but when he's been healthy, he's been pretty decent, you know. I mean, he's not lighting the world on fire, but I don't think you'd kill yourself to stick him out there, especially in the short term if you're just waiting for Brantley. So right. I think the only chance you have of something is like a trade. Right, and we saw this like bubble up when the Rockies signed Gerardo Parra. Like, oh, the Rockies have too many outfielders, you know, and oh, the Indians asked the Diamondbacks for AJ Pollock, and they asked so and so for Joe Schmo. But they don't seem to have any interest in trading a pitcher, which is what everyone wants from them.
Right.
And I can't say I blame them. You know, I think right now they're thinking, well, we're not really sure what we have in Trevor Bauer. And if you say you trade Danny Salazar, now Trevor Bauer is your number three. Your rotation just got quite a bit weaker.
Well, and I was going to say there's one of two ways to look at it. You look at it as either the Indians trade a definite strength that they have to improve a weakness, or you look at your strength and you ask yourself, why would I weaken this?
Right. Right. And I think they look out and they basically say, well, wait a minute. Danny Salazar is going to be here for like 4 more years. We just need another year or two before guys like Naquin and Zimmer are here. Why would we, you know, like you're saying, weaken ourselves in one to fill a hole when we might have that internal option soon?
Right.
You know, they're basically sitting around thinking like, yeah, Carlos Gonzalez might be decent in the short term, but wouldn't Bradley Zimmer hitting 270 or 280 chasing down fly balls from Danny Salazar be even better?
Right, yeah.
And I guess I read online that the report was pretty much that the, quote, calls had stopped since Christmas, which is probably because they realized, they being the other teams, that it just wasn't going to happen.
Right.
You know? I mean, they call about Danny Salazar, and we say we want A.J. Pollock. that's probably not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I learned this as a very firm rule growing up, that when someone says no enough times, they mean no. You know, you can only ask a girl out so many times before you just realize it's not happening.
Yeah. Chris Antonetti has just been asked to the prom one too many times this winter. So I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, maybe they swing. I could see like swinging a deal for like an Ender Inciarte level outfielder, you know, a guy that doesn't have the big contract of a Cargo, won't cost the same in prospects, and could be a more long-term piece. I mean, let's face it, the Indians don't deal in short-term pieces.
Right.
Especially when they're dealing long-term assets. They don't get short-term pieces back. So that rules out a lot of people. And they don't deal with headaches. So, no, Yasiel Puig is not coming to Cleveland. So, I think they're banking on internal development, you know? And I guess at that point we can turn toward the Tigers and how they've approached the offseason and how that, you know, affects the Indians and the Central Division. So, what was it, $110 million for Jordan Zimmerman?
Oof.
And what was Upton's? 40?
I was going to say 150, just off the top of my head.
So, prior to a few days ago, that was like the shining hope for Indians fans. Was you looked at the Tigers outfield and it was like Anthony Gose.
Right.
I mean, the Tigers, you know, for the last several years, they've employed the stars and scrubs outlook on things.
Right.
And their outfield was definitely scrubs. And then they went and signed Justin Upton, which, I mean, the middle of that lineup, not the end, okay, but the middle. So you're going to have Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez, JD Martinez, Ian Kinsler, Justin Upton. Am I missing anyone?
No, that's pretty frightening.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. The Indians have to play them 19 times.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean.
But I think, right, that's why you're not trading your pitcher.
Exactly, right.
You're looking at it and you're like, there's no way we can get that much offense. But we can try to neutralize it by having one of the best starting rotations in the league.
Yeah. By the way,
improving our defense.
Upton's contract, 6 years, 132.
Okay.
There's a player opt out after the second year, which these opt out clauses are crazy.
It also, wait, was it Upton? Was he the one that's getting all the deferred money?
It doesn't say. This article just focuses really on the opt out.
I think it's Upton is getting. No, it's Chris Davis. Chris Davis, Peter Angelos is going to be paying Chris Davis for like the next 22 years.
It's a Bobby Bonilla contract.
I'm not kidding either.
Yeah.
What I heard in regard to the Tigers was that, you know, Upton, of course, is a Boris client, and Boris seems to have Mike Ilitch on speed dial, and he seems to ring him up every time a year about this time and be like, Prince Fielder's really great, but nobody will sign him. You should really think about it. And Mike Ilitch is like, yeah, maybe I should.
I should think about it.
Yeah. So apparently, even after the departure of Dave Dombrowski, the Tigers are still going with this Stars and Scrubs model.
Right.
And what I heard was that Mike Ilitch really, really, really wanted Chris Davis. And, of course, if you're Al Avila, the Tigers GM, like, how do you do this, right? Because Scott Boras can easily – I mean, he, like, has made his career the last couple of years out of going around GMs and going straight to the owner. So Al Avila probably does the smartest thing he can do in that situation and not say, no, we shouldn't spend $140 or $150 million, but says, oh, you want to spend $140 million? What we really need is an outfielder. Why don't you go get Justin Upton?
Right.
And apparently, who's not an aging slugger who can't run the bases and has no other skills. So apparently that's how that developed from what I understand. Which I guess I'm a little sad that Al Avila had the forethought to tell Mike Ilitch to go after Justin Upton and not Chris Davis, because adding Chris Davis to the Tigers would have just like taken the self-destruction up another notch. I mean, the Justin Upton deal is really, in the scale of the Tigers deals, is not really that bad.
No, especially when you consider the opt-out.
Right. I mean, if you're the Tigers, hopefully he opts out. But it does, I mean, it doesn't even, like, compare to the, you know, level of dead weight that they'll be giving Justin Verlander and Miguel Cabrera soon.
Right, yeah.
They're also still paying Prince Fielder some money, so. I understand it's kind of like the Tigers are kind of disheartening for Indians fans because they have so much money.
Right. So they're bad deals. I mean, it's kind of like the Yankees. Their bad deals don't hurt them like a bad,
right.
You know, like when Cleveland signs Nick Swisher and Michael Bourne and those contracts don't work out, that hurts much more than,
yeah,
you know, when you sign Victor Martinez and the last 3 years of his deal are a wash due to age and injury.
Right. I mean, like, the Nick Swisher $56 million contract would, like, Mike Ilitch is, like, losing that in the laundry.
Right.
He's like, what? That's nothing. We can just sell that contract somewhere else. We'll just put more money after that and fix it.
Right.
So, the Indians did cut Chris Johnson.
Yeah, which I thought that was an interesting move. Basically just saying the roster spot's more important to us.
Yeah, I mean, like, Indians fans, of course, are going to look at that and be like, another waste of money, and now they are going to tell us they don't have any money to spend. Like, actually, Silas doesn't like that.
He feels very passionate about that.
Yeah, and I think what he's trying to say is that the correct interpretation is that that was actually showing ownership's willingness to spend money.
Right. Yeah. I mean, burned some money.
Yeah. Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff are going to him and being like, we're spending $10 million on a wasted roster spot. Like, we could get much more production. Like, we could put Jose Ramirez in that spot for the minimum and get more production out of it, even when you factor in the burnt salary.
Right.
And the Dolans were like, okay, that makes sense. Let's cut him. So essentially what they did, if you look at all, if you actually work out the math, is they took two bad contracts that took up two roster spots in Swisher and Bourne, and they cut two spots down to one, and then they took, like, I don't know, several million dollars of the albatross off their neck and basically got it down low enough where the Dolans were willing to just cut him and get both roster spots back.
Yeah, I mean, they did not come out of that deal unscathed, but...
No, but I think they made the best of it they could.
Yeah, given the production that they were
given
getting.
Given how ugly the situation was, you know?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we've belabored that, how unfortunate the whole thing was, so we don't need to go into that anymore.
Yeah. So, anything else that we need to touch on with the Tribe?
I don't think so. Just that we'll be paying Chris Johnson to play for the Marlins this year.
That's where he's probably going to end up, yeah.
Yeah, they signed him.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. So
I didn't see that.
So we saved.
I thought you were being facetious.
No. So we saved $500,000 because he's getting the minimum, I'm sure.
Right.
Why the Marlins think they want him, I
oh, what a mess that team is. Jesus.
They extended D. Gordon, though, and signed Wei Yin Chen. Because that's what they needed.
Oh, man. That team. Yeah, no matter what, at least we're not Marlins fans.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, I think that's going to wrap us up for today, Jason.
Sounds good.
So I'd like to again thank our listeners. And if you're listening to us, give us a review on iTunes. We'll be recording sporadically. Boy, life gets hectic when you start talking about kids and stuff. But next time that we record, make sure that you tune in. In the meantime, you can check us out on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TSM Baseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.